Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7 The Bronc. .com, proudly nominated for five consecutive National Association of Broadcasters Marconi Awards for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx all-digital studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health and Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, the healthcare industry, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and perspective. Today, Marina Jean Baptiste and I are having a conversation with Jonathan Glassman Hunt. Jonathan is the co-founder and CEO of OR Health. Welcome to Health 411.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And it's fun to have you here. Before we ask you, well, why don't we start off this way? Why don't you tell us what OR Health is? That's OR, O-A-R, Health. What is this company and what is its objective?
OR Health exists to make access more private and convenient to a daily pill to drink less. So we serve people who are trying to change their relationship with alcohol and want to put safe, effective, FDA-approved medication in their toolkit to achieve that goal.
Cool, and we're gonna find out how you do that. What is your background that led into this? Did you go to college saying, this is what I wanna do? Jonathan, how did OR Health become a reality? And I say that because it's a relatively new company.
It is. We've been serving customers for a little bit over 3 years. In many ways, I built OR Health because I needed something like OR Health. I struggled with drinking pretty much my entire adult life. What started as binge drinking in high school and college became a pattern of drinking to blackout. And then as I saw peers start to grow up in their late 20s and early 30s, the opposite was happening for me. I was having longer and more serious binges and tried a lot of treatment options over those 15 years or so, but only really was able to take back control over alcohol once I learned about and got access to medication that can help with that issue and those goals. So when I was back in college, my plan to start a digital health or a telehealth company.
So I can ask this because I'm a university professor on a campus here, and I'm surrounded by a community where there's a lot of rules surrounding alcohol. And I'm assuming, where did you go to college?
I went to school not too far away at Columbia in New York.
Oh, okay. You're in Manhattan, but on campus, I'm sure like any other university, there are going to be rules surrounding alcohol use on campus. Did any of those rules make a difference in your personal journey?
No. I think there are rules and then there's culture. And about the only rule that I remember from college was alcohol was technically not permitted in the freshman dorms. It was allowed in other dorms. And you were in real trouble if you threw anything, including a bottle, out your window. That would generate a crackdown.
Yes.
But the culture, and it's been about 20 years since I was in college, okay, so perhaps this has changed. But the culture around drinking was sending a lot more pro-drinking, pro-binge drinking messages that I think overrode the signal from whatever rules existed.
Yeah, and from one of my perspective is a lot of the rules on colleges' campuses are designed instead of to make people sort of reasonable users of alcohol. It teaches them to hide it, do it undercover. And you're nodding, so that might have been a little bit of your experience as well.
Yeah, definitely. There was that need to hide it. I think, because we have such a strange relationship with alcohol as a culture, I think a lot of folks get introduced to it through binge drinking. You were right, we're in Manhattan, so we technically couldn't go out to bars. And so there was much more of a emphasis around free gaming, which is kind of a who knows what the slang is these days. But that's what we called it back in my day
It's
when
still
you
free
like
gaming.
binged before you officially
Yeah.
had.
Yeah. So would any of those rules made a difference in your journey? Because obviously at some point you had what I guess is correctly called now alcohol use disorder. Did any of those rules make a difference?
I don't think so. I think perhaps more education around how people were actually using alcohol, because I think while I saw part of the culture that was very drinking heavy, there were definitely other students who weren't drinking as much, and maybe just some statistics on like what the norms are instead of that message, that very visible binge drinking and people seemingly having fun. That might have made a difference. But I think in my own case, at some point in our society, whether it was high school, college, or post-graduation, I was going to be introduced to alcohol. And it scratched an itch for me, largely around social anxiety. And who knows, there's always the counter historical where a few variables are changed and things go differently. But I think I was probably going to be at risk, no matter what the rules, no matter what the environment.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, and I just want to follow up and say, we have our society has a very complicated relationship with this particular molecule of alcohol because some religions, it's actually drinking is part of the has religious significance. It's built into this. It has a big social significance in terms of business and even being social in college. Yet it can cause severe problems. And so did you start off, were you like one of those people right away, a binge drinker with blackouts, or was there a progression for you through those things?
I definitely had a problematic relationship from the beginning, but in environments like high school and college, and living in a city in your early 20s, it was somewhere within the mainstream of the sort of binge drinking that you see at those ages. I think I probably met the diagnostic criteria for AUD, but didn't stand out in a hugely problematic way. And there are people like me who start that way and then kind of grow out of the condition. Where I started to feel like I have a problem that needs treatment was when I saw people dialing it back, using it as a social technology, and I was having bigger and bigger physical, mental health, social, professional consequences. That kind of happened for me more so in my late 20s and early 30s.
Okay, so already you're out of college and were you in grad school at that time? Because I know you also went to grad school. Did
Yeah,
that was
believe
that
it or not, business school, I think is another environment where a lot of the cultural
Yes.
messages are to drink more. And
Yeah.
my problem definitely got worse in business school.
Yeah. I had a student once who once identified as alcohol as sort of the cash cow of academia because it seemed like all social events had beer and wine and stuff like that, student gatherings, professional meetings. There's always socials and stuff like that. And in some ways, parallels the business world, but it has a lot of currency there. And just real quickly for this end of the segment, were your issues restricted to alcohol, or a lot of people consider alcohol a gateway drug to other things as well?
That's definitely true in general. In my specific case, alcohol was such a good fit for me that I didn't have a lot of interest in other
Other
drugs.
things.
There was also a lot of marijuana around, but I never really got into it because alcohol scratched my particular itch.
Cool. And just follow up with the connections to university studies. Were you in a fraternity, a social club, or any of those sort of things that sometimes people think make these issues worse?
Not a fraternity. I did participate in one extracurricular activity where there was kind of a drinking culture around it. Business school in general, I think definitely has that. No, not a fraternity specifically.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate you doing it. What we're going to do is we want to not concentrate on you, but we want to talk about the transition to OAR Health and what OAR Health does. But we need to take a break for some underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant, that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell, to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties, to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7thebronc.com. Welcome back to Health 411, which we're recording from the Digital Bronc Studios. We're having a conversation today with Jonathan Glassman Hunt. Jonathan is, in the previous segment, told us about his journey that inspired the formation of OAR Health, which is based in New York City. And but you didn't form this company right out of grad school. This is, you know, you're not fresh right out of grad school. There was something, you had a professional career that might have been a little bit different, doing other things. So how, can you tell us about that journey to what you're doing now to OAR Health?
So I had, as you say, a more traditional, less entrepreneurial career journey before OAR. I worked in healthcare, but in healthcare strategy, both at a consulting firm and then at a couple of national health insurance companies, in parallel to the more personal struggle with alcohol use disorder that we talked about in the last segment. And it was only finding help in that personal journey that kind of led me to change my career path a bit. The real turning point for me was connecting with a primary care physician who did two things that were very different than my prior encounters with the healthcare system. One, he supported my goal of moderation rather than abstinence when it came to alcohol. And secondly, he suggested prescription medication as one tool in the toolkit to achieve that goal.
So can I follow up with two things about that? So
please,
not having been in that environment, is that the typical response when you talk to a physician? Say, look, you know, because they often ask you, how much do you drink? How often do you drink? A lot of people lie, which I think the data is pretty clear on that. But if you're honest, is the response, oh, you really need to quit? Is that the standard response that you were getting?
That is
wow.
Common. Yes, we have a long way to go in terms of physician and other healthcare professional education so that they feel confident and comfortable treating alcohol issues as frequently as they arise in their practices, particularly using the modern tools of medicine, such as the medications that have been around for decades. It's still way too common for a physician to say, you need to quit. Here's a pamphlet for your nearest AA meeting. Okay. Nothing against AA, but it's not the only option.
Yeah, so AA is about abstinence, and which is sort of interesting because there's a religious sort of component to that, but it's alcohol abstinence. At least that's my opinion. You know, not everybody would agree with that. But let's follow that. So was this a traditional physician, or was this a physician in like a therapy, talk therapy kind of session that was giving you that kind of response?
As a primary care physician,
okay.
You know, I had gone to talk therapy previously, and it was quite helpful with some issues of anxiety and depression that were distressing and probably interrelated with my drinking, but it didn't really help me drink less. This physician that I connected with was part of my primary care practice. He was kind of the practice's go-to guy for patients experiencing issues of addiction. But you know, the good part about some of these prescription medications that are available is any licensed prescriber can prescribe them. And if you ask like the NIH, they'd say should be prescribing them more often.
And this was the first one. I'm assuming it's not the first physician you talked to about this.
Not at all. Yeah, I had tried a lot of different access points, other primary care physicians. I'd ended up in the emergency department, and I'd worked quite adjacent to these issues while in my kind of more traditional Fortune 500 career.
Okay.
And I'd never heard of medication as an option.
Really?
To achieve
interesting.
Moderation.
Okay. So medication's an option. The elephant in the room is what medicines did you try, and which ones worked, which ones don't work, and what were your experiences with that?
So there are three medications approved in the United States by the FDA for the treatment of alcohol issues. The one that is the recommended frontline medication for most patients is called naltrexone. Okay. And that's what was prescribed to me. Okay. The way that it works is it cools off the pleasure and reward pathways that alcohol activates, making it easier to have one or two drinks instead of way too many. And then over time to have fewer days drinking, maybe not drink at all. I had a really positive response to the medication. But it is important to say that there's a diversity of responses. Mm-hmm. It's not a silver bullet or a miracle cure.
Naltrexone is a helpful tool
that they can use alongside others.
So before we started recording, Jonathan, I introduced myself as a professor here. I'm a biology professor, and my background happens to be in neuroscience.
So I'm not going to try and educate you.
You don't have to tell me about opioid receptor antagonists. I've actually used naltrexone both in neurobiology labs and in my own research. So I happen to know it's a mu opioid receptor antagonist that has, I think, a primary affinity for mu, but it also binds to kappa and sigma. You're nodding, so I'm not getting it wrong. So it's one of these things. In our society, it's sometimes associated with another opioid receptor antagonist that's now traveling in kits and things around in ambulances and stuff like that, which is naloxone. And you're nodding. So what's the difference between naltrexone and naloxone that people might have heard about that's in the ambulances now? It's in the news because we live in a world of an opioid pandemic.
Yeah, please correct me if I misstate the science, but they my understanding is that they are relatively similar. The key difference being that naloxone is fast acting, and so is most commonly in those ambulances because it can reverse a opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. Naltrexone, while it binds to many of the same receptors, provides something more like around-the-clock protection against either a high from opioids, which is what it was originally developed for, and then the happy accident that was discovered was that it also cools off the pleasure and some of the pleasure and reward generated by alcohol.
Right. And my understanding is, and now you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're the expert in this thing, is its effects are not restricted to alcohol. If I remember, at one point it was being tried for treatments of obesity and some other things like that are somewhat related to addiction and addictive kind of behaviors. You're nodding. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, its FDA indications are only for opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder, okay. But it is included in a weight loss drug as mm-hmm. well, and not the new ones, but an older.
Yeah,
an
it's
older
not dinner. The GLP-1. Right.
And then there is some suggestive evidence that it may cool off the reward from things like gambling, for example, other sort of obsessive behaviors for some. Yeah. So certainly possible that it has some ancillary effects there. We certainly hear from members that they've lost 5 or 10 pounds. But mainly it's frontline for alcohol use, also has an indication for opioid use, mm-hmm. although has largely been surpassed in clinical practice with things like buprenorphine for opioid use disorder.
Oh, okay, got it. There used to be an older one. I don't know if it's still being used. Anabuse, is that still around?
It's still around. Okay. If folks have heard of any medication for alcohol use disorder, it's probably Antabuse. Mm-hmm. And what they probably remember, which is true, is that medication makes one violently ill if they consume any alcohol. And so it can be a deterrent to drinking, but compliance in the real world and adherence can be low because who wants to take something that's going to make them sick?
Right.
And it's really only appropriate for patients who are pursuing a goal of abstinence.
Complete abstinence.
And so for all of those reasons, naltrexone is recommended by most experts as kind of the frontline medication, although Antabuse may be appropriate for particular individuals depending on their goals.
And if I remember correctly, Antabuse works because it interferes with the metabolism of alcohol in some way, and it sort of creates like an acetaldehyde poison metabolite that sticks around for a long time, and it makes people like violently ill. which would be a deterrent.
So you can understand why people are not necessarily excited.
Which is sort of, which is a nice thing about naltrexone is it does it have those kinds of side effects? Is it like there's got to be something going on?
Yeah, it does not negatively interact with alcohol itself. Okay. So it's not going to give you those feelings of sickness if you drink. Side effects are possible, as with any medication. The most common are nausea or other upset stomach type experiences, which often dissipate as people get used to the medication, but can certainly be a barrier to getting started in the first few weeks. And so there are ways to work around that, taking it with a meal, splitting your pill into a morning and an afternoon dose. But that's the thing we see people struggle with the most in terms of getting started.
Excellent. And I want to hear more about that, getting into the OAR Health mission. But we need to take a break on Health 411 for more of our underwriting announcements. You are listening to Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advanced Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We're continuing our conversation with Jonathan Glass Hunt, the co-founder and CEO of OAR Health. And we're hearing about his journey mixed in what OAR Health is, its mission is. And what I'm hearing is OAR Health's mission is to make naltrexone available to people who want to not necessarily completely abstain from alcohol, but have a better relationship with it and sort of manage their alcohol intake much better. Did I get that right from what I'm hearing?
You did. We support people whose goals are moderation and sobriety, and those whose goals evolve between the two categories over time. The main way that we do that is to increase access to the recommended frontline medication, a daily pill to drink less or to quit. So folks can connect with a healthcare professional licensed in their state through our site, get a diagnosis, get a treatment plan, if appropriate, get a prescription, and then at their option, get that medication shipped directly to them at their door in a private and convenient way.
Why, given the widespread use of alcohol in our society and all the problems with it, why is OAR Health's sort of path doing this so unique?
There are three main reasons we see why this medication hasn't been adopted more widely. One is lack of awareness. It's been generic since before pharmaceutical companies started advertising directly to consumers, which some of your college-age listeners may not remember, but that was there was that period. And so no pharma company has had the economic incentive to make this a household name like Prozac or Viagra is. Two, as we touched on, physician awareness, training, comfort, confidence, prescribing this medication is woefully low. And then thirdly, there is still a little bit of a remnant idea in some traditional treatment centers and programs that using medication to treat alcohol use disorder is the easy way out or a crutch or replacing one drug with another. We think we need all the safe, effective education tools we can get.
What you didn't mention was the connection or the association of naltrexone with the opioid pandemic that's going on. So that's not a barrier that you're finding for the acceptance?
You know, some folks do ask, is naltrexone an opioid? Mm-hmm. Because as you described, it binds to opioid receptors, but as an antagonist rather than as an agonist, meaning it blocks opioids from binding. So sometimes that's a question that folks have. you know, and the good news about this medication is that it's not, you know, subject to abuse because it doesn't build dependency, or to put it more casually, it can't get you high. It can only block you from getting high from opioids or reduce the pleasure and reward from alcohol.
And just for people listening, one of the things that happens when the mesolimbic dopamine system is activated, some of that activation of the system involves opiates. And so the way Jonathan described it is sort of the magnitude of the effect of taking off. So it doesn't feel as good as it did before. And so your description of it was really good. So people who take naltrexone, do they experience observable changes in like pain sensitivity, pain thresholds while you're on the drug?
That's not a side effect that I'm aware of. You know, there's a very, very edge case that's been described to me of like people who kind of, you know, enjoyed things like spicy foods that have a mix of pleasure and pain that they might not enjoy as much. But, you know, that's the exception. What, you know, the rule that we really see much more commonly is that as people cut back or quit on alcohol, it creates space in their lives to engage with other healthy, natural reward pathways and get more out of exercise, time with family, sex, all sorts of good things.
Well, that's good. So the mesolimbic dopamine system's not made inactive when you're on this thing. And so are people taking naltrexone as a pill, as a daily injection, as a subcutaneous implant? How's it administered?
It's available in two formats. One is a daily pill, and then the other is an intramuscular injection. Okay. The good part about the intramuscular injection is it lasts for a month. So you get the shot once a month. The downsides are it's more expensive. You have to go to a doctor's office or in some states a pharmacy for the injection, which can be inconvenient. So adoption is actually, as best we can tell from the market data, higher of the tablet, but they both work. Some formats are, you know, the one format is a better option for some patients and vice versa.
And as you mentioned, it's a generic, but it's an approved medicine for alcohol use disorder. Is it covered by insurance for people who
in many cases, yes. At OR Health, we do not accept insurance.
Okay, so you're all private pay.
It is all private pay at OR Health. Yeah. But many insurers do cover naltrexone. And so sometimes the most cost-efficient way for people to get access to the drug is to find a primary care doctor in their community, use their insurance at their local pharmacy. And of course, we support that pathway. We're always there as plan B for those who either don't want to involve their insurance for whatever reason or need a more private and convenient option. Okay.
So is OR Health and I might be making a mistake here. I don't want to emphasize this if it isn't true. A place for people who want a better relationship with alcohol can sign up and get naltrexone. But does it also provide some of the talk therapy kind of things? Because I would think the best success comes when you have both.
We don't provide talk therapy directly to address your question. You know, we certainly think that every person who's trying to change their relationship with alcohol has the right to assemble the toolkit that fits them. Medication can be a component of that, individually driven, mindful plan to drink less, professional behavioral health care like talk therapy, mutual peer support, all of the above, some of the above. You know, the evidence indicates that each of those components can be effective, that they can also be effective in combination. And so we kind of share, you know, kind of take the view of the NIAAA, part of the NIH, that, you know, says folks should be offered all of those options, made aware of them, but should not be denied access to any one of them just because they don't want to do all of them. As a relatively new small company, we're focusing mainly on filling the medication access gap, which many of our members do combine with therapy, with moderation management, with Alcoholics Anonymous, almost every combination one could imagine. Because that's the great thing about this menu. Almost all of these treatment options are compatible rather than competitive.
Is one of the options in OR Health to provide like we're because prescriptions are all state specific. So if in New York, you would need a physician in New York. In New Jersey, you need a do you guys have physicians in different regions? So no matter where somebody lives, they can get a script.
We operate in 41 states, okay. Not quite nationwide yet, driven by exactly the considerations you're alluding to, that this is regulated state by state, both in terms of pharmacy laws and telehealth laws. And so we're going at a pace that allows us to stay in compliance with those laws.
Excellent. And so it sounds like if somebody got a prescription, they'd get a prescription from the state that you're in physician that you can take to your pharmacy, and insurance might cover a portion of that. But the
fees that's exactly right. Mail order partner pharmacies.
Oh, okay.
Also operate on a cash pay basis, but if someone prefers to take it to their local pharmacy, they always have the right to get the prescription filled at a pharmacy of their choice.
So when people are paying out of pocket for OAR Health Services, are they paying for the consultation for the physicians? Is it a membership fee? How does that work?
There's an upfront $50 fee for a consultation with a healthcare professional. And then we have membership fees that range from $39 to $79 a month based on the type of plan that someone selects. That includes follow-up visits with the clinician, access to the medication itself through one of our partner pharmacies, if that's the member's choice, and then access to our community support, which includes a weekly smart recovery meeting and a anonymous online support group, as well as the other digital and on paper tools that we provide. So most folks end up finding that it saves them money just in less alcohol costs, let alone the benefits that are harder to quantify.
Yeah, well, that's a very fair point. So I want to come back and I'm going to ask you some questions about the successes that you are seeing after we take a break for some underwriting announcements at Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advanced Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. Recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. We are continuing our conversation with Jonathan Glassman Hunt, the co-founder of OAR Health, where he is also the CEO. And in the last segment or so, he sort of described what OAR Health does. It's sort of business model. You're focusing in on helping people not necessarily quit alcohol, but have a better relationship with it, reduce their use. What kind of successes are you having? Are you collecting data on how well your sort of model works for people with these issues?
Yes, about two-thirds of members report that they are meeting their goals, whether that's to drink less or to quit. And that's validated by the administration of an objective measure of alcohol use risk, where again, about two-thirds of those folks are drinking either not at all or at low or moderate risk levels versus generally starting from a very high risk point of departure. So like anything else in this field, no silver bullet that's 100% successful with anybody, but we're proud of those metrics.
Yeah. And behavior is very, very hard to change, as you know, as somebody who had these sort of issues. So the people who come to you, are they generally people who have failed at more traditional methods? Or are they people who hear about you and saying, well, I don't like the way my path is going? Like, so if you described like a 10-year, 15-year progression, what's the typical client or, you know, not really patient, but what's a typical client profile look like?
Yeah, we see both folks who are trying OAR as their first intervention, so to speak, because it feels more private, more convenient than other options they may have in the back of their minds. And then we also see folks who've tried a lot of different treatment options and not achieved the results that they're looking for. Our typical consumer is somewhere between 30 and 50 years old, although we run the gamut from 18, which is the youngest that we serve, to people in their 70s and their 80s. The thing about alcohol use disorder and about our membership is that it cuts across almost every demographic group one could think of, age, income, race, and ethnicity. And so we see that reflected in our membership as well. The thing that kind of holds them all together is that they're trying to drink less or to quit. Probably the thing that's most different about our demographics versus maybe another treatment option that you might talk to is about 70 to 75% of our members join with the goal of moderation rather than sobriety, which we take as a signal that there's this undermet need for moderation.
Yes, maybe people are realizing something. Now, you mentioned like you've had people 18 to 70 or 50, whatever the high end was, but that 18 number struck on me because in most states in this country, the legal drinking age is 21. If I'm on a college campus, if somebody wanted to reach out to your company and said, I'm 19 years old, is that a barrier to being involved with your company because they're not of legal drinking age? Like, how would you guys deal with that?
No, it's not. We're happy to treat people 18 and up. We're not going to report people for underage drinking. That's not why we're around.
Thank you. That's good.
We do set the threshold at 18, just because there's an additional level of complexity in treating minors that we're not ready for. But I know from my own experience that people can have a diagnosable problem with alcohol before they reach the legal drinking age.
And I'm going to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to ask you if somebody was to reach out with you at college age, is it all confidential kind of stuff? Or where does that information that, during the interview and all that stuff, where does that information go?
Yeah, we do take privacy very seriously. It's one of the main reasons that people come to OAR Health for treatment. And so we have invested heavily in our technology infrastructure to keep people's data private and, detail the specifics of our privacy policy and approach on our website.
Cool.
Do you guys have any campaigns or like public events that raise awareness about these differences?
We've so far, it's a great question, we've so far kind of focused on trying to reach people in the places and moments that are where they're most likely to be thinking about a change. And so a lot of that is people turn to Google to look for help. And then we've also reached a lot of people through AM radio, people on their way to work in the morning and maybe regretting some of the things that happened the evening before. We're not quite yet at the scale to be running, national TV or out of home campaigns, but someday we hope to.
Cool.
How do people find OAR Health?
It all gets started at OAR Health, OARHealth.com. We have a lot of resources about alcohol use disorder and medication-assisted treatment, because those are not household names or concepts. There's also the option to connect with me for a 15-minute chat, kind of like what we've been having today. And so I would invite anyone who is interested in this topic personally, for somebody that they love and care about, or just academically, to take advantage of that option.
Cool. And I'm going to ask this question, and you've been very open about things you've shared also. Are you still taking naltrexone? Are you, a sense, a customer of your own business?
Yeah, I have stayed on naltrexone. It's been, geez, 7 or 8 years, enough that I've lost count. I found it helpful to keep it in my toolkit. In general, our clinical advisors recommend staying on it for at least a year and then making an individualized decision, hopefully in consultation with a healthcare professional about whether and how long to continue. But I've kind of taken the approach, if it ain't broken, you know, keep doing it.
So are you able to now go to business meetings, conventions, social events? I mean, you're promoting a new business. People say, let's go out for a beer after we talk. Are you able to do those things and feel comfortable doing them, or be around people who are drinking without those urges that you had before?
Yeah, you know, people are less likely to invite me out for a beer once they hear what our business is about.
They shouldn't fear that.
I kind of found this place where I'm able to have a beer at a baseball game, have a glass of wine with dinner, and not be on a runaway train. I still need to be mindful about it. Okay. I've had slips where I drank more than I intended, but the progress from where I was before is transformational to me.
So it sounds like you found a method that worked for you, and you wanted to share it, and you created a business about it. You had some, you know, business exposure in the healthcare fields, and you sort of made it your own business. For somebody who doesn't, I have my own demons, but that's not one of them. So when you're on naltrexone and you have a couple drinks, what's the thought process before? Is like, yeehaw, I'm just gonna go until I don't remember. Like, what has changed? Like, am I communicating what I'm trying to ask here?
Yeah, absolutely. What's changed for me is that first one, two, or three drinks does not generate the same feelings of excitement and euphoria. And therefore, the urge to drink four, five, six, et cetera, is much weaker. Which creates room. One of our members said it puts like an angel on the other shoulder that the demon is on, that leaves room to make a more thoughtful decision over time. Still requires a decision, but it makes it less automatic that you're on the path to that binge blackout drinking that was my main problem.
Yeah. And it sounds like for somebody who has those issues, that's sometimes all you need is sort of that, you know, your brain saying, hold on here. You know, let's reevaluate this. You're nodding. Is that sort of?
It can be kind of the variable that switches the balance for some folks. Of course, more effective with a plan, limits, strategies to achieve that plan. In my case, no shots, no more than one drink before eating something. Support for my wife in meeting my goals. So not a silver bullet, but yes, it can tip the balance towards success for some folks. And then there are other folks who find, you know, it's not the right tool, or moderation is not a sustainable goal. And those are some of the OAR members I'm proudest of, are those who started out with a goal of moderation, gave it 6 months or a year, and then decided I'm going to graduate to sobriety as a goal, which is an excellent goal as well.
Yeah, and for anybody who has alcohol use disorder or some other things that involve sort of the same mesolimbic reward systems, all the things you're saying would be positive, all positive goals for them. Unfortunately, Jonathan, we are running out of time. Thank you for joining us. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. Thank you for listening to Health 411. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider's efforts to bring people together to address careers and issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. I want to thank again our guest from today, Jonathan Glassman-Hunt, the CEO and co-founder of OAR Health. Please check it out if you are curious about alcohol use disorder. Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us. If you have
Thanks so much for having you.
If you have questions or comments about this program, or to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes, or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 1077 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.